You're listening to The Reverse Stick, the Global Hockey Podcast. Time now for our featured interview. And this week, we're talking to a man who's was there for perhaps Australia's darkest hockey moments. That was probably the 1976 Montreal Games, but he was there for the Victoria side, the New Zealand team. And to hear, to go through his hockey story and just talk hockey generally, Alan Chesney. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to come on and chat to you guys and share.
Well, look, Alan, I mentioned the 1976 Olympics there, but your hockey journey obviously started a lot earlier than that. I was trying to find out some information about you, and I ended up at your Wikipedia page. I don't know if you knew you had a Wikipedia page, but it describes you as British-born New Zealander. What exactly, you know, where were you born for a start, and what was the journey that led you to being a New Zealand player?
It's like in the old days, a lot of people emigrated. Well, yeah, I was born in England. It was only two when we emigrated to New Zealand. Four kids and the whole household, car, everything. And it was just, you know, my parents decided to get out of England and, well, a number of reasons. And, we ended up in Christchurch. And in a little suburb down there called Sumner, which is a seaside suburb. And they found their dream block that overlooked the mountains and so forth. And they built a house, and that was in another little town called Redcliffs, which is about a couple of miles from Sumner. And I went to primary school there. I was six at the time. And they only played hockey there, which is the most unusual thing in New Zealand, because usually a rugby country. So hockey was it. You were offered an opportunity. They had these sticks in a box, and you just grabbed one on the way out to break, and you just had to play. And then we ended up buying our stick. They used to have them every year. They were called the 10 Bob Stick. They were green, and they came from India, I think, and they broke after about 3 weeks. because you know what the glue's like when you get them from there. And that was rough grounds and everything. It was a small school, only 250 kids, but they had this tradition of hockey. And, three of us were in the Olympic team. We all played together at primary school. So,
wow.
There you go. So that was the start. So yeah, definitely from UK. Ironically, I traveled the world with the New Zealand team with a British passport. and when I went to Australia, they started talking about, you have to get Australian citizenship. Otherwise you have to go back to the original country. And mine would have been UK, so I ended up getting an Aussie passport. So there you go. New Zealand one. I don't have a New Zealand one. I've got a UK one and an Aussie one.
Yet you've won an Olympic gold with them, bloody hell. I'm really interested in that primary school as why that hockey history was there. Was there a schoolmaster that was particularly involved, or why was the hockey buzz there in that particular place?
I think it just was one of those things that was a tradition from years and years, and then it just carried on. It was because it's a small town, but and had a lot of success. I mean, before me, there was several New Zealand players, and local, what we call Canterbury, which is the province, like the state. So that continued on. But when I was at that school, this guy, Ewan Cameron, came to the school as a teacher. He just loved sport. He's come from a sporting family. His brother was a New Zealand cricketer. His other brother was a New Zealand athletics administrator and so forth. But he just loved organising sport, and he just encouraged us. So he was brilliant. And we ended up with six teams and five grades from that school. And we just hammered everyone. And this is where we ended up with a lot of rivalry from the other boys who ended up in the Olympic team, I can tell you about. So we started our rivalry and I suppose in joining each other from that time. So that Montreal team has an interesting history. If we continue on, I can tell you more.
Well, yeah, Alan, I'm interested to know, because it seems that it was almost as if there were three groups of players that had all played a lot of hockey together, all coming into that one team at the same time. Is that sort of about how it happened?
Yeah. Well, what happened in Christchurch, hockey is pretty strong anyway. I was quite amazed because muddy and rain and stuff, but anyway, hockey was pretty strong. The Canterbury team, in those days they didn't have tournaments as such, so they had the challenge system, and they had this challenge shield, which they still got today, and Canterbury won it for many years, so that we had a lot of sort of idols, if you like, came from our school and then went on to the various high schools. Now there was the closest high school to me was Linwood High School, so quite a few of us went there. And we ended up having a strong team from there, but a lot more went to what we call Christchurch Boys High School. So those other two out of the three of us went to Boys High. They caught two buses. I don't know why, but they did that. And, you know, just to go to a boys school, I want to go to a mixed school. And so we used to go on our bike, but, what happened? We developed a rivalry at primary school with, this other school called Bishopdale, and that was where these Maester brothers, they were pretty famous. two of them were in our Olympic team. The other one, Chris, should have been, but it was a political decision that he was left out. But anyway, we started quite a rivalry with them at primary school, and we used to beat them. And the father of the Maesters was the teacher there, so he was their coach and everything. And then we ended up in a primary school team together, like a WA team. But that was at primary school level. It was called the Hatch Cup. They played for, it was a New Zealand title. And, so these players, we started getting, you know, brought together from around the city. And then playing together in that team, and we were successful there. So we had a rivalry, and then we had this, I suppose, no different than a club rivalry, and then you're in the state team together. And then you played nationally, and then you developed some rivalry there. So some of the other guys from the other provinces around New Zealand were in those provinces that ended up in the Olympic team too. So we started our connections pretty early, like primary school, around the country. That was sort of, it was an age group thing. So certainly, obviously, the ones who are younger, you would have missed them and gone on to high school. But when we went to secondary school, again, we had this rivalry, and we didn't have state teams or provincial teams as such, for our age group. So we just played in our school team in the tournament at the end of the year. And so there was a few different tournaments we played in, and I played for Linwood, and these other guys. The boys high team was the team. And you know, that high school, is the current All Black coach is from there. Many of the All Blacks have come from there. That's just had this pride, and when they came on to the ground, they used to say, instead of boys high, the three cheers, they'd say school, three cheers, and we used to hate that. So we'd always want to beat them. So we used to beat them every now and again, but anyway, that rivalry went on, and we won titles, they won titles, and then of course we left school, and then we had rivalry in the clubs. And then we were brought together for the provincial team, state team. And the guy that brought it all together was a coach named Cyril Walter. Cyril Walter was like a perfectionist, but he played for New Zealand 1940, something. But he learned from a guy named Dean Chand.
Oh, yes.
And Dean Chand was the hero for all those Indian teams won the Olympics, you know, until no one ever beat them.
Well, he's got his own stadium now. The field.
Yeah, well, and he's still a hero, like over in India and Pakistan, they remember all those people. And his son went on to play for India as well. I played, you know, and then he's obviously his grandson and all that sort of stuff. But Cyril used to say, they went out to New Zealand, they beat everyone about 13-0, you know. And he said to Dean Chan, he said, what do you do? You know, how do you do all this? And he said, well, I just dribble up and down for hours and hours and hours, just dribbling the ball. So Cyril decided, well, if it's good enough, that's good enough for anyone else. So he decided that's what we would do. And we ended up doing a hell of a lot of dribbling, but we couldn't do it on the grass because it was too cold and wet. We didn't have any lights, so we couldn't do it outside. So we did it inside. And we had this in a roller hockey rink stadium, cold as hell, but he'd have us standing in a line with our sticks held out over the top of people, so he had to bend down because you weren't allowed to come up, and dribbling the ball, and you had to move your feet with the ball, you had to caress the ball. There wasn't any loose, like when I came to Australia, there's a lot of loose sort of dribbling. No, none of that. You had the ball, the stick had to caress the ball. And Cyril was a bit of a character. He loved a beer or three, and he loved to smoke, but he was immaculate sort of guy. And he'd sort of follow you around and push you, and he'd have his cigarette in his corner of his mouth, and he'd push you down, or he'd just get people with the sticks over you, bent over, so that you stayed down. And John Christensen, who was one of those guys from primary school, has a neck problem today. Yeah, he does, because he used to go home and do this stuff. And it's interesting, because there's a lady who lived up the hill used to look down and thought there was something wrong with her. He was, you know, disabled, because she used to see him dribbling at his home on his lawn, and thought he was, you know, like he was this bloody ape man, you know. And he's ended up, he can't move his neck, and he's sort of bent over, yeah. And if you ever watch him play, he could control the ball, no one could get it off him, but they felt the shit out of him and he used to get upset. But they couldn't get it off him. And so in the Olympics, we'd have him on for 2/3 of the game, because he had, you know, amazing stamina. And then they'd have people marking him and all this sort of stuff, and then we'd take him off and bring on a totally different guy with a different style, Alan McIntyre, who could dribble loosely but very, you know, and they didn't know what hit them. And we called Mac. Mac couldn't last more than about a third of a game because he used to smoke. I mean, you know. But he was a brilliant hockey player. But anyway, I'm digressing a bit, but this is how it all happened. And Cyril was this guy who coached 7 of us out of the 11.
Yeah.
He's quite pedantic, but he coached a lot of discipline and drills. I mean, I suppose in the individual things, but he never wanted to just display this dribbling on the ground. So any time we started dribbling, he says, what the fuck? What are you doing? What are you doing trying to impress Nancy, you know? The girls had this imaginary girl on the sideline, hey, you know, anyone would have a girlfriend called Nancy. And he said, stop trying to impress Nancy, you know, with your bloody stick work. So we were never allowed to use it, but I'll tell you what, when we did use it, we could beat anyone. And, you know, and that's what... It cost me a broken nose in Bunbury when I came over there, because I went down there with a team once, you know, and scrub cutters, they used to call them. And I naturally, you know, a guy coming towards you, you do the old left to right, And of course, he is, we kept going in the straight line, and bang, that was my nose gone. So,
I want you, Alan, to take us back to old mate with the neck problems. When did we start bending our knees in hockey?
Yeah, well, he was bending. I don't know. He was bending his knees, bending everything. I mean, we had to be down that low, you know. I mean, I was a defender, and you. He I mean, he had very strong quads, and a lot of us did, but I suppose a combination, we had to bend our knees and bend everything because we couldn't find the ball sometimes. We're so muddy. But, you know, in New Zealand, that's why we also developed the right side of the play more, because, you know, it was a much better strategy in those conditions. Whereas when we played Australia or came to Australia, we struggled because of the fast grounds and they were using the whole field. But yeah, so yeah, bending knees was a priority, bending your back was a priority. He's also bent his neck, so I didn't go to that extreme, but yeah, but you know, it develops. I mean, you look at it, it develops your core.
Yeah.
And most people don't have that strength today, I don't think. And it's so essential. I'm now in a different area and I realise how important the core is. But it must have just naturally doing that.
Do you think that, in some ways the torture that Cyril was putting you guys through actually prepared you for that first tournament on AstroTurf? Montreal was the first major tournament there.
That's right.
Do you think that sort of might have given you a bit of an edge over other teams that hadn't sort of maybe fully adapted to that flat surface that you would have got when you were doing that stuff indoors?
Absolutely. That's the thing. I mean, even one of the guys who's the vice captain, Jeff Archibald, who you might remember, knows his son has done very well for New Zealand. Jeff actually pulled himself out of the final lineup. Now, there's a book being written, and I found this all out when the book was written. It's called Striking Gold. And Jeff pulled himself out because he actually struggled on that surface. He came from Auckland, and he hadn't done what we'd done. It was just like, you know, it was beautiful just to go onto a carpet after what we'd been used to with our preparation. So the hardest bit was trying to adapt to, I suppose, because we were trained in a smaller area, we're then confronted with a large pitch, you know. So going forward at speed. So it was good, the combination of the whole team, we were able to do both. But yeah, definitely made a huge difference.
Did you get time on the turf before going out and playing your first games in the Olympics?
Yeah, not a lot. This is amazing. We went prepared in Toronto and stayed at this place called Upper Canada College. Like we're in a dormitory. That was our luxurious accommodation. And we had the Pakistanis staying there as well. That's where we learned about their evolution habits. it could be another session we could do. But then we found the only Astro pitches there were football grounds. So I think it was the Blue Jays or something there. And so the first opportunity we had on Astro, I went out there and it was dry. And imagine. And it was this great big football field. But anyway, the ball was flying around everywhere. And then they decided to arrange a tournament because India and Pakistan and us and I think Canada, they arranged a tournament there. And it was the first time we'd beaten Pakistan. Maybe ever. And that was sort of like, gave us a lot of confidence. But yeah, that was our first, they actually wet it. So it was quite good. And then when we got to Montreal, they had a practice pitch, but the turf, was the pile was long, quite long. And they said, no, we have it long so then it wears down so it can last longer.
Oh, no.
I tell you, mate, well, you know, it was early days. People didn't know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the main pitch at Montreal was at Molson Stadium, was at the university there. But it had a huge camber on it.
Oh.
And because, you know, looking from, I was left half, so you're looking right across the other side, you can sort of see half a body.
Right.
Just
for runoff.
Yeah. And of course, you can imagine they're still, you know, coming back to what you're talking about with rules, they still persisted with the leather ball. So we had this leather ball with a big seam on it on a turf that had a huge grain. So one side of the grain was, you know, it was like an in-swinger that came at me. Like when I was lining the ball up, you know, you got the seam going and it's coming at you and you got to line it up and suddenly you're wrapped on the pads because you miss it.
Yeah.
And because in the old days you always stuck your feet behind everything, nothing was going to go past. But back today. And on the other side, of course, it hit the seam and just started to bounce and then really went. And so it had a few challenges, but it was the same for everyone.
Alan, you mentioned you had a practice game against Pakistan. Now, we're led to believe through sources that anybody that played Pakistan in that tournament knew they'd been in a game of hockey. Is that your regulation of playing them?
They were okay with us. They had a few dirty players, their left half and he was quite often on the sideline. The centre forward was the sort of guy that if he went past the goalkeeper, like if he didn't take the ball with him, he'd quite often belt the goalkeeper's bum with his stick. just politely, you know, on the way through. That's where they stuck themselves up. When they played the semi-final against Australia, they tried to hit them. And the Aussies were a lot tougher. And they came off second best. And they lost the game. They were probably the best side there, Pakistan. They beat us, I think, 5-3. It was a great game. It could have gone either way, but they were brilliant. But we didn't have a lot of problem with that side of it. They just decided to have a go at Aussie and there was the wrong team to pick on. You know, because they're used to it.
Well, forget about the Australians. Tell us about the Olympic glory. Tell us your memories of that.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people say, you know, oh, what's it like going to Olympic Games? And I said, well, you know, it's your dream. Like, you know, it's my dream since I was a kid. Because, you know, we didn't have all the other distractions that people have got today. So, you know, like people like Peter Snell was my hero. He won 3 gold medals in running and all that sort of stuff.
John Walker?
Yeah, well, John Walker was in our Olympic team.
Oh, of course, yeah.
He won the next... He won the gold the next day. So you had this build up, but we had a lot of challenges along the way. One of them was this proposed boycott because the All Blacks decided to go to South Africa and play.
Oh.
And the government said, well, we're not backing you, but you know, if they're all Black fans, they said, you go, but not without blessing, but some of them were probably on the plane with us. Anyway, so put it this way, and they said, oh, no, you know, sport's a great way to get rid of politics. So they decided to persist with that. And, of course, this guy, Abraham Ordea, was head of the Black African sport. And he said, let's have a boycott. And so the Black nations in Africa boycotted Montreal, but they were hoping that because there was a number of Black nations versus little New Zealand, that New Zealand would get thrown out. So we had this sort of cloud over our head while we're training all for Montreal, not knowing whether we're still going to be in. This is how, I mean, took it to officialdom. And we didn't know even until we got to Montreal whether we're still going to be able to play.
Wow. Wow,
yeah.
And, but we just presumed, you know, and we heard later that all these messages were going to the different governments and behind everyone along the way. We heard it's later. No, I've heard it, what, 40 years later. But we had no idea. So we were under this sort of cloud. And so, you know, you can imagine you're putting all the training in and you want to play and you want to be at your best, but then you're not too sure whether you're going to play. So when we actually got the opportunity, it was huge. But it was very tight because Kenya pulled out, so we had one less in our pool. And people think, oh, that's great, you know, you want one less to play. But Kenya is sort of a game that you'd hopefully you'd pick up the points, but they're also quite good at picking off a few teams. They've done it to us once, so they beat us in the World Cup, where you sort of get a bit complacent. So it tightened our pool up, and then we had we drew with Germany, and we drew with Spain, and then we won a game against Belgium, and then we lost to Pakistan. We thought we were out, and then we were actually at back at the village watching this game between Belgium and I think it was Belgium and Spain, and we thought, oh, Spain will beat them. But there was the last minute to go, and this guy had a stroke. It was 2-2, and this guy from Belgium had a stroke, and he put it in. And that put us in with a playoff for the semi-final. So I'm giving you an idea of the tension. And so then we had a playoff with Spain, and because Australia blew it the other side, they should have beaten India, and then they lost to them, and they ended up with a playoff with India. No, lost to Argentina, sorry. And then, so there's both Australia and New Zealand end up having to have playoffs in to make the semis. And anyway, we had to play Spain again, and we went extra time and beat them. The good thing about we were very well prepared in terms of it's the first time we'd ever had a trainer and that we knew about our fitness. And we're probably the fittest team there, which is unusual for us. So we had all the skills every time, but we just never had the fitness. We didn't know what to do. So this time we did. So we went extra time. We had a lot of stamina. We're quite happy to go in extra time, and especially on AstroTurf because you can toss the ball around a bit and wear people out. So we won that. And then, of course, we're up against Holland, who, cocky buggers. They always have been. But surprisingly, I think I only played them 3 times and we beat them 3 times. They have this air about them, you know. It's just the way they are. We didn't know that, but that's just part of it. We had a Dutchman on our side who used to say things, talk in Dutch, and he'd catch them out and talk back in Dutch, and they bloody shit themselves. Anyway, so we thought we were going to lose that one. They had this guy, he had a break on his own. We thought he was offside, and then he got the ball, and apparently, and you know, okay. And he had the goalkeeper to beat. And our goalkeeper, I mean, he's never done anything like this in his life, came out and just took the ball off him with his stick. Like, you know, just casually came out one-handed and tackled him. And unbelievable. I mean, you have to see this because of the goalkeepers in those days, like he had a cricket cap on. Just a box.
Yeah. White pads, maybe. Maybe not even the yellow pads by then.
Yellow cane pads that he bought himself, he imported them himself and paid for them himself. You know, no special stick or anything like that, just came out. And this guy was one of their most, you know, skillful players. And he just took it off him, and then when he got the ball, he just threw it out over the sideline. And we couldn't believe it. Anyway, we won that one. An extra time, and then of course up against Australia, and we thought, well, you know, we were underdogs, we got nothing to lose. We've minimum silver medal. None of us had ever been. I don't even think we even made the semi-finals and World Cups. I mean, some guys, it was their third Olympics. Yeah. And we were just so overwhelmed, but we were just excited.